Have you ever done this? You set a really ambitious goal. You know, get super fit, finally learn that language, maybe change your chaotic inbox, and then just a few weeks later you feel, well, completely deflated. You start wondering, is the problem just not me? But what if the real issue isn't some lack of willpower? What if it's actually your approach? Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're jumping into Atomic Habits by James Clear. And this isn't just, you know, another self-help book, it's more like a framework. A really powerful one that explains why focusing on tiny, consistent changes, why that can lead to really extraordinary, lasting success. So our mission today is to pull out the most practical, maybe even counterintuitive bits of wisdom from summaries and excerpts of this huge bestseller, basically give you a shortcut to understanding how to genuinely transform your habits. Get ready for a simple, but honestly pretty powerful framework. It might just shift how you think about growth. Lots of surprising facts and, crucially, stuff you could actually do today.
It really is one of those books, isn't it? It kind of reshapes how you see things, especially when you grasp the huge impact of those tiny daily choices. They seem so small.
Yeah, and it's so easy to overestimate the importance of, like, one big defining moment, right? We think we need this massive, dramatic change to make any real difference. But what does Clear say about that? Why argue for something, well, something smaller, almost invisible, to get those big results?
Well, he talks about what he calls the compound interest of self-improvement, and it's pretty stunning when you look at it. The book lays out the math. If you just try to get 1% better each day for a year, by the end of that year, you're actually 37 times better.
37 times, wow.
Yeah, it's that quiet exponential growth. But flip side, if you get 1% worse each day, you basically end up near zero.
Mm-hmm.
So what feels like just a tiny win or maybe a minor slip up on any given day, it really compounds into something huge over time. It's like this invisible force.
So it's less about where you are right now, how successful or maybe unsuccessful you feel, and it's more about the direction you're actually heading. Like, are your habits putting you on the right path towards who you want to become?
That's a perfect way to frame it. Clear puts it really well. I think it's on page 22. He says something like, "All big things come from small beginnings. The seed of every habit is a single tiny decision. But as that decision is repeated, a habit sprouts and grows stronger." It's a great image, right? These little seeds we plant every day.
Okay, this next idea. It often feels a bit weird for a lot of us, especially if you love setting goals, you know, mapping everything out. What if, and hear me out, what if setting goals is actually holding you back?
It definitely sounds counterintuitive at first, but it makes a lot of sense when you dig into it. See, goals are about the results you want, right? The finish line. But systems are about the processes that get you those results day in, day out. Clear argues that if you're struggling to change, the problem usually isn't you or your desire. It's often the system you have or maybe the system you don't have. You've got the wrong setup for change. There's this really powerful quote that sums it up. "You do not rise to the level of your goals. You fall to the level of your systems."
Mm. Oof, that hits hard.
Yeah.
It completely shifts the focus, doesn't it? So for you listening right now, it means maybe redirecting some of that energy. Instead of just staring at the summit,
yeah,
you need to focus on building the path.
Yeah.
Like meticulously designing those daily actions that will just naturally get you there. Build the track. Don't just fixate on the finish line.
Exactly. And Clear reinforces this later, page 27, I think, he says, "The purpose of setting goals is to win the game." Makes sense. "The purpose of building systems is to continue playing the game. True long-term thinking is goalless thinking. It's about that continuous improvement, not just hitting one target and stopping."
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting for me. When I first heard about identity playing a role in habits, it felt, I don't know, a bit abstract. How does who we think we are really affect what we do every day beyond just, you know, I should do more push-ups?
Yeah, and that's where the deeper shift happens. Clear explains that your current behaviors, they're basically just reflecting your current identity, whether you realize it or not. So the real key, the secret sauce for lasting habits, isn't just focusing on what you want to achieve, like lose 10 pounds. It's about thinking deeply about who you want to become. It's like a two-step thing. First, decide the type of person you want to be. Maybe I am a healthy person or I am a writer. And second, you prove it to yourself with small wins, tiny actions. Each little thing you do reinforces that identity, kind of rewires how you see yourself.
That's such a powerful way to put it. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become. Suddenly, even a tiny effort feels, well, it feels meaningful, like you're actively casting a ballot for your future self.
It totally does, because it links directly to what you could call your potential self. You know, that ideal version of you, visualizing that person gives you a roadmap. It shows you the habits you need to build to close the gap between who you are now and who you want to be. So instead of thinking, I want to run a marathon, you shift it to, I want to become a runner. Then every run, even if it's just like 5 minutes around the block, it's a vote. It's you being a runner, embodying it. And practically, if your potential self is, say, an organized person, you start casting votes, tidying your desk for 5 minutes daily, using a planner consistently. These aren't just tasks anymore. They're actions solidifying the identity you're building little by little.
All right, let's get into the nuts and bolts then, the practical stuff. How do habits actually work, like inside our heads?
Okay, so fundamentally, a habit is like a loop in your brain, a neurological feedback loop. CLEAR breaks it down into four simple steps: cue, craving, response, and reward. The cue triggers your brain, that creates a craving, which then motivates a response, the actual habit, and that leads to a reward. The reward satisfies the craving, and crucially, your brain starts associating that reward with the initial cue. Boom, cycle formed. Now, the interesting part, the real insight, is that most of us focus only on the response, right? The action itself.
Yeah, just doing the thing.
Exactly. But the real power, the leverage, often comes from understanding and messing with the cue or the craving. Like, if you want to stop scrolling on your phone all the time, it's not just stop scrolling, it's figuring out the cue, maybe boredom, or just picking up the phone. And the craving maybe for novelty or connection, that's where you can really intervene.
Okay, that makes sense. And these four steps become the four laws of behavior change for building good habits. Let's take the first law, make it obvious. What does that mean in practice?
Make it obvious is all about setting up your environment. So the cue for the habit you want to do is just right there, unmistakable. It's about being intentional. A really effective way is using what he calls implementation intentions. You get super specific. Instead of vague stuff like, I'll meditate more, you say, I will meditate for 10 minutes at 7 a.m. in my living room. See, that specificity makes the cue really hard to miss.
Right. No ambiguity. Okay. Second law, make it attractive. Why is attractiveness so important for getting a habit to stick?
Well, it taps into anticipation. Our brains are basically wired to chase things that promise a reward. We're drawn to pleasure. So a great strategy here is temptation bundling. You pair something you need to do with something you really want to do.
Oh, like stacking them.
Exactly. So you might say, I only get to listen to my favorite podcast while I'm doing chores, or I'll only watch my guilty pleasure show while I'm on the treadmill. It makes the less fun task way more appealing.
I like that one. Okay, third law, make it easy. We definitely try to bite off more than we can chew sometimes, don't we? How do we simplify things?
Oh, totally. This law is all about reducing friction, making it as effortless as possible. Because the easier something is, the more likely you are to actually do it, especially when you're tired or unmotivated. And the 2-minute rule here is brilliant. You scale down your habit so it takes less than 2 minutes to start.
Just 2 minutes?
Just 2 minutes. So read 10 pages becomes read for 2 minutes. Or do a full workout becomes put on my workout clothes. It's not about the big outcome initially. It's about making the start of the habit incredibly easy. You're building consistency first, then intensity later.
Got it. Build a muscle of showing up. Okay. And the fourth law, make it satisfying. We're usually told to delay gratification, but here it's about immediate satisfaction. Why is that good?
Because our brains prioritize immediate rewards. We're wired to repeat actions that feel good right now, not just potentially good way down the line. So while the long-term benefits matter for locking in a habit, that immediate feedback is crucial. Use habit trackers visually. Seeing that chain of X's on your calendar feels really good. It's satisfying. Or get an accountability partner who gives you immediate positive feedback. That sense of accomplishment cements the habit.
Okay, so that's the blueprint for building good habits.
Yeah.
What about the flip side, getting rid of the ones we don't want? How do we break bad habits effectively?
Right, so you just use the inversion of those same laws. You basically do the opposite. To break a bad habit, you want to. One, make it invisible, get rid of the cue, hide the cookies, delete the app. Two, make unattractive, focus on the negative consequences, reframe why you don't want to do it. Three, make it difficult, add friction, make it harder to do, put the remote in another room, add extra steps. And four, make it unsatisfying, add an immediate downside, like having to pay a friend if you skip a workout, or just feeling the immediate negative effect. You're dismantling the loop.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
But it brings up a really important point, something I think resonates with a lot of people. Why do we give up so often? You know, you start strong, you're doing the thing, but you don't see results, and then you just stop.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
Yes. That's what Clear calls the plateau of latent potential. And it's such a key concept because it explains so much frustration. He points out that results, well, they don't usually happen right away, and they're definitely not linear. There's this the significant delay. You're putting in the work, you're being consistent, but the benefits aren't visible yet. It's like, imagine an ice cube in a room that's slowly warming up.
Okay.
You don't see anything happening for a while, right? It just sits there. But internally, it's warming up. Then it hits 32 degrees Fahrenheit or 0 Celsius, and boom, suddenly it starts melting fast. All that work before the visible change was crucial. It was accumulating. That's the plateau.
Wow. Okay. So sticking with it during that phase when it feels like nothing's happening, when you feel like you're just treading water,
yeah,
that's absolutely critical for actually getting the long-term results.
Yeah.
You have to trust the process, even when it's invisible, which, let's be honest, can be really hard.
It really can be, but patience and persistence are everything here. You have to kind of develop faith, you know, faith that those tiny consistent improvements, even when they feel totally insignificant day to day, they are adding up, they're accumulating, and eventually they will lead to those breakthroughs you're looking for. You just have to endure that quiet period.
So let's make this super concrete. What does this look like day to day? Can you give some specific examples of atomic habits? Stuff you listening could literally start doing, like today or tomorrow.
Absolutely. The book's packed with them, and they're often wonderfully simple. Things like spending just 5 minutes stretching right when you get out of bed, or reading, say, 10 pages of a book before you go to sleep.
Okay, simple.
Writing down maybe 3 things you're grateful for each evening. Drinking a glass of water first thing upon waking up, super easy cue. Doing 10 push-ups or 10 squats right before lunch. Taking a quick 10-minute screen break after every hour of focused work.
That's a good one.
Replacing just one unhealthy snack with a piece of fruit each day. Practicing maybe 2 minutes of mindful breathing before you start your workday, just to center yourself. Dedicating just 15 minutes maybe during lunch or after work to practicing a new skill you're learning, like a language or an instrument. And one I personally like for keeping things sane. Spend 5 minutes tidying your workspace or main living area each night. Sets you up for the next day. They're all small, right?
Yeah.
But they compound.
Those are all incredibly doable, fantastic examples. So how do these ideas, these laws, specifically help with something like boosting productivity? That's something everyone seems to want more of.
Yeah, they map perfectly. Because productivity, at the end of the day, is really just a result of effective habits, right? So you can apply the 4 laws directly, make it obvious, design your workspace so productive cues are visible. Maybe clear your desk the night before. Make it attractive.
Yeah.
Use that temptation bundling. Listen to great music while doing boring admin tasks. Make it easy. Break down huge projects using the 2-minute rule. Just start the task for 2 minutes.
Reduces that overwhelm.
Exactly. And make it satisfying. Use task lists you can check off or productivity trackers. Get that little dopamine hit of completion right away. Let's take a specific example, like building a daily planning habit to boost your productivity. You make it obvious and easy by setting a recurring calendar reminder for, say, 10 minutes every morning, and you time block it, non-negotiable. You make it satisfying by maybe tracking how focused you are afterwards, or even just enjoying the feeling of starting the day with a clear plan. Maybe review your accomplishments at the end of the day. You could even make it easy, obvious, and satisfying by using, say, an AI assistant to suggest key tasks based on your goals, so you start with an actionable list without having to think too hard. It's all about engineering your process.
It really does come back to that core idea, doesn't it? Real lasting change. It doesn't usually burst forth from some radical overhaul. It's the quiet, steady accumulation, the compound effect of tiny, consistent actions, and shifting your focus away from just chasing goals towards deliberately building those robust systems that support who you want to become. So here's something to think about as you go out your day to day. Every single action you take, truly, no matter how small it seems, it's a vote cast for the type of person you're becoming. What's one atomic vote you'll cast today for the identity you want to build, knowing that these tiny habits are the bridge, the only bridge, really, between who you are right now and who you have the potential to become? What identity are you trying to build?